Men, if you've lost your hair, it doesn't mean you can't find it again. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who found their hair again. It can be hard for men to deal with hair loss, even though it is common. Luckily, I'm here to provide you with a solution so you don't even have to talk about it. Through Hims, you can restore your hair by accessing their personalized hair loss solutions. Men value many different things about their appearance. But if you're a guy who really cares about your hair and find that it's slowly going away, you might be feeling discouraged when you look in the mirror. And that's where Hims comes in. Check out their personalized hair loss solutions, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides you with convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we are going to discuss the offense against the Cleveland Browns in Week 18, take a short look ahead to that playoff game against the Steelers. Joining me to do that is Sam Njoku. Sam, how you doing?
I'm feeling pretty good. You know, Ravens are officially starting the playoff chase, and a little anxious because of what happened last year, but also very excited to see how things go this time around.
Yeah, you can't do anything but get up and dust yourself up at this point after the postseasons that the Ravens have had. But it's hard not to be optimistic at the same time. Maybe it's more fear goes with more optimism in terms of the way the Ravens have played in 23 and 24, being one of the best DVOA teams of all time, the most effective in terms of beating teams with winning records. It's hard to imagine this team not learning something from that after last year's very tough loss in the AFC Championship, but they face a similarly, if not more daunting road this year, going through a division rival, followed by more than likely a trip to Buffalo, followed by more than likely a trip to Kansas City.
Yeah, and this is in second year in the Todd Monken's offense, so I'm feeling a lot more comfortable how this team rallies behind that scheme that he has in place. I think, as you mentioned, this is a more daunting task. You have to go through the wild card round and they have potentially two big matchups against the 2-1 seed to get to that Super Bowl in New Orleans. So I think it's a good feeling to know that their DVOA is still in the upper tiers that they were last year. And you know, the offense is making me feel a little more comfortable. I think this time, I guess the middle of the season, I was kind of thinking, okay, then Ravens make the playoffs, then sure, you know, let's see what they can do. But now I'm feeling kind of the optimism that I felt last year, where I was like, okay, well, this is clearly the best team in the AFC. Let's put it on the field and see what happens.
Yeah, a very, very much a big few weeks ahead. Of course, the kind of a laugher again against the Browns to beat them up pretty effectively. The mirth kind of limited a little bit by the Zay Flowers injury, which is just an awful moment, I can tell you, at the park. So was the Bateman, you know, getting lit up just a couple moments before that. But Flowers going down with that knee injury really took a lot of the air out of that win.
Yeah, I can only imagine. Zay Flowers has been, you know, first Pro Bowl receiver ever for the Ravens. Having that type of production leave your offense in a game that meant something, but in the grand scheme of things, seeing this out of Steelers' loss to the Bengals didn't necessarily mean anything in regards to seeding. It's a tough blow, but I don't fault the Ravens for playing them. Obviously, these things happen. Hopefully, you know, you win enough games so you don't have to play your starters in Week 18, but it is what it is. Hopefully, he gets back healthy and makes a run in the playoffs, but it's going to be tough having one less receiver as productive as Zay Flowers, and we'll see what defenses do to adjust to having only, in my opinion, one receiver that can have that separation at the snap.
This is a point we probably ought to bring up right now is, do the Ravens need to make a change at wide receiver entering the playoffs? I mean, there are a lot of older, bigger name receivers that are out there and available, with Odell Beckham probably topping that list, a guy who has done nothing this year, has looked absolutely terrible in his time with Miami. And as with every aging receiver, Baltimore fans have a lot of excuses for him.
Yeah, I think Odell Beckham's time is gone and went. I'd be more interested in him if it was Rashad Bateman that potentially went down, but the skill set between Zay Flowers and Odell Beckham, it just doesn't match. I think what you're looking for out of a receiver, you don't have out there right now. Of course, if you had somebody with the production of Zay Flowers, he'd be on your football team. He wouldn't be in the street. Yeah. So maybe for a depth type of deal, sure, why not? But as far as immediate impact on the field, there really isn't any other options. You ride with Tylan Wallace, you ride with Nelson Aguilar, you give Tez Walker a shot, and you let the chips fall where they may. But I don't think there's anybody outside of who's in that facility currently that will be any impact, at least this year.
Yeah, that'll only get you to four receivers, that thing, which is, that's, you're riding one short at least with that. So, you know, probably Anthony Miller. Yes. Now comes back and gets a time. I don't know if Dayton Wade has shown much in practice or enough that you give him a chance, because he more maybe fits the gadget slash return slash, you know, slot role maybe you want. Dayton Wade was a guy who looked pretty damn good in the preseason. Anthony Miller had his first catch in 3 years. So that's what I can say about his season.
Yeah, I think I've heard from a lot of fans, and everybody's wondering, where's Dayton Wade? Where's Dayton Wade? And I think the Ravens are taking their time getting him acclimated to the football in the National Football League. I'm sure he has a skill set that is desirable eventually. Maybe that could translate on the field, but we haven't seen him on the field all season long. I don't see a wild card round against a division rival being the opportunity for him to show his stuff and get those 5-6 targets that were missing from Zay Flowers with his absence, most likely, in the wild card. So I think they do bring up someone else. I think you're right. Four receivers probably isn't enough. So I expect maybe Anthony to be that guy. But to your point, Dayton Wade's another guy who looked really good in preseason, but haven't seen much of him. Maybe it's a conversation we have next year, but I don't expect him to be called up.
Right. All right. Solid offensive line performance this game. We'll discuss that later in some real depth in the second part of the show. Going into this game in Pittsburgh, it's also some things about Lamar I want to talk about in terms of just him relative to his opportunity set. Lamar had a good game again, not some of the greatness we've seen so far, but I thought the weather really muted a lot of what he accomplished on the field on Saturday.
Oh, that's a great point. I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah, the weather was crazy. I mean, the players were talking about it after the game, and I've seen, you know, special team guys talk about the wind and how cold it was. Weather is a factor, and especially in December, January, weather will continue to be a factor. So it's good to see that the Ravens were able to, you know, weather the storm, pun intended, yeah, and get that job done. But you're right. Having that type of weather, the wind especially, more so than the cold, it will affect your passing game. And it's great to have a rushing attack, as you have in Baltimore, where you can kind of lean on that instead of having to rely on the passing attack to get the job done.
Well, I hope the Ravens can continue to rely on the run game when they don't have the pass game, really. Because, I mean, that now they lost two things. You've got wind, and you're down a very key get-open wide receiver, a sudden athlete, just a critical guy to your team. If you don't really have the passing game, what we've seen a lot during the Lamar era is other teams cheat up to the line of scrimmage very effectively and then try and stop the run. And that's what I'd be a little bit concerned about right now. And no team is in a better position probably to deal with the weather than what the Ravens have with Derrick Henry and with a solid offensive line. I don't think it's a top tier line, but it's a solid blocking offensive line and the misdirection that Lamar Jackson brings to the run game. But I still am very concerned about the offense, which is the Ravens' X factor being, you know, reduced to a Y factor because of what's going on.
Yeah, and I'm very interested to see how the Ravens combat that. You mentioned it. They only have one receiver in Rashad Bateman that has that ability to get separation almost every snap. The Ravens could go ahead and play more of a two tight end set, three tight end set, use Isaiah Likely or Mark Andrews as that wide receiver. And maybe the choice is to use them on opposite ends of the field so that if you are doubling one guy, then the other side is open. And that's usually where the Ravens have success. They could also lean on Nelson Agholor. They've done that in the past. Sometimes it worked out. Sometimes it hasn't. Agholor has been inconsistent this year, not the guy he was last year. So I'm interested to see if the Ravens take that chance, considering this is an elimination game. If you don't get the job done, you go home. But I'm sure the de facto game plan going into the game will be to use the run game, establish the run. Hopefully you have success against the run. But as many saw in the second Steelers game, a lot of those runs, big runs early on, was really drawing them into screens was Zay Flowers. Zay Flowers was the threat, and having that threat opened things up for the running game. So as you mentioned, the Steelers are going to cheat up. They've done it before. They're going to blitz heavy on the outside, and let's see if the Ravens can combat that.
Yeah, the misdirection with Jackson out of the mesh too had those edges coming up, you know, towards Jackson instead of, and leaving a big hole for Henry. The Steelers, as much as any other team, have been willing to do that. And this has been an interesting game the last couple of weeks. The Ravens have increased the use of trap, crunch, and wham blocks. They're really all kind of various forms of trap blocking that you use to bring people into a different position, block them from a different angle than they're used to. And making space that way, been very effective doing that. And I don't know that the Steelers would necessarily be good at dealing with that. And they've got some players who are exceptionally well suited to do that too. And in particular, it really maximizes the value, I think, of Patrick Ricard in terms of what they have. Also, in terms of a player like Linderbaum, who brings less size to the table as a run blocker, can be very effective either moving up to level two in such games or making a lateral block where he's hitting somebody a little bit unexpectedly from the side, to where his job is made easier in a lot of ways to just push a player out of the way as opposed to trying to drive him forward directly opposite his momentum.
Yeah, in the first quarter, I would say, first and second quarter of that Browns game, the Ravens tried that. The Browns had some success getting some penetration when the Ravens tried that. They leaned on the zone run a little bit more and then went back to it a little later on. I think that, as you mentioned, the Steelers aren't really well equipped. I don't think they're really more of an edge rushing team, in my opinion. They got guys in the middle that could potentially just cause some impact. And I think it will be your Tyler Linderbaum game with Patrick Ricard, maybe a little bit of Voorhees if he's playing opposite Patrick Ricard, who's still dealing with that illness. His name escapes me, but number 77 for the Ravens,
Falele,
who's, you know, been a very polarizing figure for Ravens fans this season. That interior of the offensive line will decide this game one way or another. As you mentioned, the trap game has worked very well for the Ravens. I think back to the Bills game, that first run, 80 plus yards down the field, that was a trap, wham type of block situation where, you know, the Bills were not prepared for it. So I think the Steelers will be prepared for it. That's one of the hard things about playing a team three times in one season. But I still think that the Ravens match up superbly against them. Again, it'll be up to the interior line to make it happen because, again, Nosey Flowers means a lot more pressure in the middle of your offense.
Yeah. We go into the Steelers game, and they're shockingly to me 9.5-point dogs. That's the last I check. I mean, it's like I bring it up three times during the day, and every time it's changed something a little bit right now. Oh,
it's 10 now, I think.
It's 9.5, but okay. It's got the, it's actually it's changed a little bit. The lay has changed a little bit in the opposite direction. So it's down to like what I would call 9.25 because the bigger lay is, wait a minute, I'm looking at the wrong one. Am I looking at the right one? Yeah. Now it's 195 on the Steelers and 191 on the Ravens per dollar bet. So there's a little bit bigger lay on the Steelers still. So it's still really like 9.75 is how he defined that spread.
Yeah.
It's between 9.5 and 10. But interesting. I would never have guessed it would end up here. Before the game, you know, we were hearing 7.5 might be a reasonable line. I was even thinking about that and thinking, that sounds too high. the lack of success against the Steelers has us, you know, obviously concerned about that. They say that if you're a fixed wing pilot, you just worry about how you're going to get there, your flight path, everything. You're just really not particularly worried about what's going to go wrong. You have a checklist of things. If you're a helicopter pilot, you're anticipating things are going to go wrong and how you're going to get out of the thing. And so everything is about your safety and whatnot. I'm a helicopter pilot with regard to the Baltimore Ravens and just what might go wrong.
I get it. You know, and the Steelers defense does match up well against the Ravens in a lot of ways, more so than a lot of teams in the league. But it's their offense. It's the offense of the Steelers, inconsistent at best. You know, they're getting things going their way through turnovers. We saw during the first contest between the Steelers and the Ravens, turnovers was the game. It's what really cost the Ravens in that first outlook. So I'm sure Ravens fans are concerned about penalties, turnovers being the deciding factor that swings the momentum. I think that's the only way the Steelers have a chance in this game. But we've seen it happen before. We see it all the time in this rivalry. So I get the trepidation, especially, again, elimination game, wild card round. But I still like the Ravens' chances. And if the Ravens were to fall to the Steelers, it would be a huge, huge embarrassment for the franchise, huge embarrassment for the fans. I'm sure they'll never get over it. You thought the wild card, the AFC Championship game was bad. I think this wild card round loss to the Steelers, when you're thinking Super Bowl, would sting way, way more.
Well, this is their first chance ever for this Ravens team to face the Steelers at home in the playoffs. In the 70s, they faced them once in Baltimore in a 40-14 loss where the plane crashed into the stadium. That's a game from my youth I remember pretty well, because that Colts team was thought to be very good, and they were 11-3, and they were in position to make a real run at it that year. And then the Steelers played some lights out defense that particular season, got off to a terrible start. And then they had a great run where they allowed 28 points in 9 consecutive games, including 5 shutouts. And the Steelers came in and were way too much for the Colts in that game, sadly. But this is the first time they got to play at a home since. We've been to 3 playoff games there. Is it 4? 2001, 2008, 2010, 2014. 4 playoff games there. I don't really enjoy going to Pittsburgh for a game, even though they've won 2 of those games. No, they won 1 of those games.
They
lost in. Yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly. After 0-8 and 10. And 10, they had the big lead, too. They had that 21-7 lead. So, but anyway, hopefully this is the year they turn it around.
Pretty sure. Pretty convinced. Well, we'll see. They got to play the game.
Still exciting to have. I'd still rather much have a home playoff game. And not a lot of people I know are talking about, boy, we could have had the Texans if we just lost this game, gone down to Houston, not that tough a game, and not been in any worse situation, because it just means you play the Chiefs a week early. I don't buy it. First of all, as a season ticket holder, I want the game at home. This is kind of my prize for being there the whole season, is I get to go watch this game, and it's a big deal, and also greatly increases the chance they'll play at home for the AFC Championship.
You're so good at this. I mean, no one talks about that. The chances of you playing a home playoff game in the AFC Championship game far greater if you do a 3 seed than if you're the 5. So
yep.
I think fans need to realize you got to play the long game here. I mean, there's some big matchups against the Broncos and the Bills, and then the Chiefs will have to play perhaps another team that has a chance to make some noise. Maybe the Chargers get a job done against the Chiefs. There's all types of implications where the Ravens could be playing a home playoff game in the AFC Championship game, and you want that again. You want that get back. You want the Lamar Hunt Trophy to be hoisted in Baltimore. There's a chance for that if you're the 3 seed, not so much if you're the 5.
Yeah, and as Ravens fans, as worried as I am about the Ravens messing this one up somehow, or the high octane offense being derailed a little bit by weather and by circumstance. If I'd be much more concerned if I were the Bills and had the matchup issues they have with Denver coming in and potentially putting pressure on the quarterback for one of the only times that that Allen will have felt it the whole year, or that their corners, you know, are put in a position where they can make a play on one of the occasional mistakes that Allen will make during a game. So hopefully this is something where every other team has more to worry about. And the spread would tell you that that's the case, that every other team in the tournament right now has more to worry about than the Baltimore Ravens this week. Anyway, yeah.
Everybody is convinced that the Ravens are going to beat the Steelers except for Ravens fans. And that's trauma. That is just trauma. And you know, it's the playoffs. That's why I love it so much, because the anxiousness that you could really lose. And if you don't get a second chance in the playoffs. So it's one of those things, but Ravens fans relax. I think they'll get the job done, but I get the anxiousness. It is the Steelers. It is division rival game, third chance, you know, all that stuff. It's going to be fun, but you know, very worrisome in a good way.
We're setting ourselves up for joy is another way to look at it, because it'll be an unbelievable fun week of analysis and podcasting and worrying about Ravens football the week after. Yes, and certainly there'll be a exponentially higher angst going to Buffalo and all the nastiness that can potentially lead to. But it's good. How about the Saturday playoff game? Now, obviously, Steelers and the Ravens both coming off a Saturday. Ravens can't seem to buy a Sunday game to save their lives. But playing a Saturday game again, positive or negative?
I would say it's positive. Gives the Steelers one less week to get things going. I think it's all mental over there in Pittsburgh right now. That's playing in the Ravens' favor with Russell Wilson and Pickens and that defense, all of that stuff. So I think it's positive. You'd love to have an extra day of rest to maybe get Zay Flowers in. But if you're thinking, you know, what's a good thing, it's, I think, get it out of the way, Saturday game, and knock it out. And perhaps you get a Sunday game next week in the division round. So I think it's a positive.
Then you have an extra day of rest. Chiefs are playing on regular rest. Oh, sorry, the Bills would be playing on regular rest. And,
yeah.
And that would certainly be a positive. Very happy the Ravens didn't somehow get a Monday night game.
Oh.
And I bet there was some desire to put them there. First of all, it makes a lot of sense that they're Saturday on Saturday versus the Steelers, because both them coming off Saturday, then you kind of take away that advantage to a certain degree. But if they had put them on Monday night, they almost always is a 4-5 game on Monday night because of the known travel consideration that goes with that. So teams can make their plans, and the 4-5 team doesn't change where teams go, because it's the same like positioning in the remaining teams for seeding, whether the 4 or 5 team wins. And so almost always it's a 4 or 5 game. And I'm really happy though they didn't break the rules somehow for Ravens Steelers and make that a Monday night game. That would have just been a really unfair thing to do in terms of looking forward to the divisional round. And they need to take care of business. Don't get me wrong, it's the Steelers, but you don't want to be disadvantaged ahead of time in terms of that divisional game.
Yeah, I agree. I think I would have been devastated. I would have been appealing to the commissioner via Twitter or wherever I can get him, because that'll be nuts to have that happen to the Ravens. Luckily, cooler has prevailed, and they realized that, you know, giving the Ravens a disadvantage like that would be disastrous for their money matchup. I think they want either Bills Chiefs or Ravens Chiefs at the AFC Championship game from the league, and that's what I'm thinking about as far as intrigue. But give the Ravens a shot. Let's give them a shot to get it all the way up to the top, and then perhaps a redemption story for the NFL to broadcast and market.
Yeah, I don't think the NFL gives a rat's ass about the Ravens, honestly. They don't have a Taylor Swift angle to it or whatever. But in any case, the Ravens, I think, have been given a fair road, not a too hard road, not an unreasonable road, possibly a slightly advantageous road. You could say they did a remarkably good job, and we've got to really credit John Harbaugh for getting this team the three games in 11 days and having his team ready to win those games. It's very hard to do that. Very hard to do that. Yeah. And that's really good. The Ravens having a Saturday night matchup. The Ravens have a remarkable home primetime record. And it used to be one of the jokes is that they would always end up playing these games in Pittsburgh. And the Ravens actually told the league ahead of time, look, we don't want to play another Sunday or Monday night game in Pittsburgh. We do that every year. Give it to us in Baltimore. And they, that year, I think they didn't have either game. Both games were 1 o'clock or whatever. But for years, if you look at the history, they were really overwhelmed by games there. And the Ravens, for good reason, the Ravens have just been remarkable at getting their team ready to play for night games in general, and certainly for home night games in particular.
Oh yeah, blackout games. I love it. So if you're a Ravens fan, you've never been to M&T Bank Stadium during the night game, this will probably be the one to do it, because yeah, the Ravens go all out for their games, and the team is hyped, the fans are hyped, and it's pretty much a spectacle. But yeah, to your point, primetime is really good for Lamar Jackson and his Ravens team record wise, and I think a lot of fans noted that and are very excited at the opportunity to use that type of advantage, at least psychologically, as that game approaches. Because yeah, the Ravens do have success on primetime moments, and I think because the Ravens are amped up, they take it more seriously, I think, maybe, you know, slightly. But whatever the case is, they seem to do well on primetime, and they get the opportunity on Saturday night to get that job done against the Steelers.
This part of what's really fun right now is looking at the Ravens' last two seasons and just how remarkable they've been. But we got to take a moment and rest and like just take a look around here, smell the rarefied air, because the Ravens have been one hell of a football team. The fifth best ever DVOA last year. They follow this up with the seventh best ever DVOA in 2024. And, you know, Aaron Schatz is saying, well, DVOA loves the Ravens. They're, you know, he's anticipating all the negativity and skepticism that goes with that. But the truth is the Ravens have done very well. It's not a subjective metric. So it's not something that, you know, Aaron Schatz has changed the formula to make it work for the Ravens somehow, or said, well, we're going to take out all the 1 yard touchdown runs, as appropriate as that, you know, could be theoretically for MVP voting. It's, you know, it would be something you do for this. And the 2019 Ravens were the 12th best of the DVOA era. So just during a 47-year period now, Ravens had three of the top 12 teams in the last 6 years. In the last 6 years, three of those Ravens teams have been among the top 12 DVOA teams of the 47-year period. So remarkable run.
Yeah, and a lot of it, of course, has to do with Lamar Jackson. He's a matchup nightmare.
Yeah.
And when you give him an offense like this where you're just asking the defense to guess at some point where they're going with the football, to pick your poison this year about how you choose to attack this offense, you're going to get this type of DVOA. You're going to get wide open receivers in the red zone. You're going to get huge running lanes for Derrick Henry because of the effect and fear that Lamar Jackson brings. So it all ties to Lamar Jackson, and John Harbaugh and his coaching staff has done a remarkable job of catering the offense around Lamar Jackson. We've talked about it for years since 2019, how they've done that. They continue to build upon that with Todd Monken's offense, and sky is the limit. I still don't think we've seen the best of this offense. I still think that if they got a huge playmaker receiver like Ja'Marr Chase, it would take it to the next level, but that's really a luxury. They're making history as is right now with a superb receiving talent in Zay Flowers and a surging receiver in Rashad Bateman to go along with Mark Andrews and Isaiah Likely, Derrick Henry. So they have a pulling offense. And it, again, around Lamar Jackson, if you give number eight weapons like that, you got a chance to make history.
Well, in offensive line, I guess, would be the next place where they would grow, because they won't spend any significant draft capital at a wide receiver this year, I don't believe. But I really have loved what Monken has been able to do. I don't think he's really what's the word I'm looking for? I don't think he's having to subject his ego in any way by keeping elements of the Roman offense involved. But the Ravens have done a great job of layering on the Monken offense on top of elements of the Roman offense that were extraordinarily successful. And they still have maintained the ability for Lamar Jackson's, for example, success rate of running backs with him maintained at a very high level, despite the fact that they went to more one back sets, a lot of less of Patrick Ricard, but they're still very effective at giving defenses dilemmas with Monken's new twists to or layers on top of the Roman run game offense.
Yeah, that speaks to Todd Monken's acumen as an offensive minded coach. I think coming out of Georgia, I think one of the things that a lot of people talked about was his ability to get the most out of his players. I think that was his, you know, star factor. It wasn't that he was great with zone running. It wasn't that he was a great run coordinator in his time as a coach. It was just his ability to make the most out of his players. And John Harbaugh said it, and a lot of people rolled their eyes at it, that Todd Monken wasn't going to come here and create a new offense. He was going to build upon the offense, and he's done a great job. I think the first year, I think in my mind, went better than expected. as the offensive coordinator just because of what he was asked to do in a limited amount of time since his hiring. And this year, he's just had an opportunity to, you know, flourish and build upon it and kind of expand the concepts of both the passing game and the running game as well. So I'm very interested, if given an opportunity, what he does in year three with this offense. But right now, year two, he's making history, and this team has a shot to go all the way. And a lot of this success has to go on the shoulders of what Todd Monken has done with this offense, and I'm very pleased with it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we did hear today that the Chicago Bears reportedly are asking for the right to the ability to interview Todd Monken. The Ravens will not refuse it. They always allow these kind of requests. And frankly, when you want to have the ability to build a coaching staff, part of that is being open to the notion that you're going to lose people in short order. And it is what the Ravens aspire to. They aspire to greatness offensively, defensively, whatever it might be. Next year, maybe Zach Orr is looking at head coaching job somewhere. And it should not be, oh, no, we're losing another coordinator. This is all Harbaugh's fault. No, it's not Harbaugh's fault. It's Harbaugh's success in hiring the right people that he's done this. But they will have to, this offseason, a big thing to me, Sam, and I want to hear your thoughts on Monken too, but is that they're going to really need to rebuild the coaching ranks for succession planning at both coordinator spots. But certainly on the defensive side, they really need a lot more, I think, young dynasty type talent that has a chance to be coordinator or a head coach at a future date.
Yeah, and Harbaugh relishes this. He loves it. He honestly does love it when his coordinators go on to get head coaching jobs. This is what he does. He's building leaders, that's what he says. He's building leaders. He's building coaches that are going to go out there and have success in the National Football League. And yeah, Harbaugh doesn't consider this to be a travesty that he loses a Mike McDonald or any other offensive coordinators to the wild, as you could say, that is the NFL. I think he relishes it. He loves it. He's happy for those guys. And they do have a succession plan in place. They build upon it, as you mentioned. I think this year, as you mentioned, they need to get some young talent at the defensive and offensive side of the ball just to get themselves ready for another transition. You mentioned Zachary Orr. Much maligned earlier in the year, but he's turned things around and people are taking notice. I'm not sure if Zachary Orr is going to get a coaching opportunity this year, but as you mentioned, next year, if this defense continues to build upon the performance of the last 7 weeks, we could be looking at Zachary Orr potentially being a head coach somewhere. So yeah, it's one of the great things about being Harbaugh, the Harbaugh coaching tree, as you can say. You know, they had the Belichick one, they had the Shanahan ones, they had the Schottenheimer ones. I'm sure Harbaugh loves it for that fact, where you could say, okay, these coaches came from me and we're able to have that success. So I think Harbaugh is enjoying it. And I think Ravens fans should enjoy the fact that the reason why these coordinators are going out to be great head coaches is because your team is playing very good football.
Absolutely. You look at even just in the regular business world, the executives that I respect most, you know, the people at the company I respect most were the people who were agnostic to how long their great people would stay in the department, because they knew they were great people. They just want to get the most out of they can for them for the time they're there, and then they're going to move on and they're going to be great somewhere else. And you don't worry about that. You just you go and you hire more great people if you do that. But the executives that I had a lot of respect for didn't look at something as a hiring decision as something they were annoyed by, such that they wanted to get maybe a slightly inferior person to work for them for longer. That really pisses me off.
I agree. And working where I do and seeing these executives and leadership guys, they you want to hold on to talent, but you're holding them down. You got to make sure that you, first of all, appreciate yourself as a teacher, willing to teach the young guys to come up and to build them into the executives that you see in yourself. That's one thing. And just enjoy the fact that someone else is having that success and appreciate their time and all of that. So I agree with you. I think Harbaugh, better than anyone, does a good job of that. And for all those leaders out there who have companies or have leadership roles, use your role to better not only your company, but the people that you hire.
Handicap it for me. What do you think the possibility is that Monken gets a head coaching role this offseason? I'm going to write down my number so I have it here.
All right.
Okay.
Yeah. Do you want to go percentage-wise? Zero to 100?
Yeah, percentage by any team.
I would say it's higher than people think. I think it's like 60%. I think you have the number one offense in the league. People have seen you grow a talent like Lamar Jackson, who's possibly going to be your back-to-back MVP. You have young quarterbacks out there. You want to see a guy mold them, and you see what Monken's able to do with Lamar as far as being a passer. I think it's high, but I think a lot of coaches have, I mean, owners have their coaches in mind. So Monken may not be the guy this year, but I think it's a good chance, especially if the Ravens continue to have that success in the postseason. So I'd say about 65. Maybe I'm being a little too leaning on that number, but I'll go with 65.
65. Okay. So I said 25. I think one of the reasons that holds the probability down is that Monken is not a dynasty coach. So you're not looking to build a guy who's going to be around for 20 years. Monken's already 63 or whatever he is. He's a guy who can take you from 2 to 5 years probably as a head coach in the NFL at this point. He's ideal for a franchise that has a star coordinator that's 2 years away. So if you have that guy, like if you had Mike McDonald right now and you're the Chicago Bears or something like that, and you say, well, great, he's going to be ready in 2 years. We got a plan to get him in a position to do that, and maybe to even take a position on the other side of the ball to maybe, you know, get ready for that. If they had that position in place, that succession plan in place, then Monken could be a perfect guy. And if you're Monken, yeah, you probably do want 2 years of head coaching money, and you want that on your resume, probably even at age 65. $8 million a year or something that he might make in a 2 year deal would be nice. But on the other hand, he's got the offense to run right here in Baltimore if he wants to do that as well. And anywhere else where he goes, he's leaving Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, and you made an excellent point. I completely forgot about his age. I didn't even factor that in to my decision making. Yeah, you're right. He doesn't have an infinite amount of time. It's very finite, his opportunities and years as a head coach. So that's a great point. So I think you're correct. I think 25, I'll go as low as 20 now in that regard. I think a lot of these owners are looking for these young up-and-comers like Mike Tomlin back in the day, John Harbaugh back in the day, Donald. Keep a coach for 20 years type of deal. So yeah, you're right on the head. I don't think that Monken would be an ideal candidate in that regard. Now, as you mentioned, if there is a coordinator out there, or if there's a quarterback who's, you know, up there in years but needs an extra push to go from good to great, maybe potentially. But to your point, I think Monken's age is a factor. Unfortunately, that's ageist, some would say, but it is life in the NFL. You want to get a guy that's going to be there for a couple of decades to lead your franchise into the promised land.
And if you're Todd Monken and the carrot is dangling in front of you, if it's Caleb Williams working, that might be a guy you really want to try and make into a good quarterback. So it would be in a more attractive, you know, spot than other places. If you're, you know, job that you're given is to get a franchise that otherwise is pretty solid to bring in a Kirk Cousins to help them try and win the Super Bowl and make the next push into being a playoff team, that's a lot less attractive.
Men, if you've lost your hair, it doesn't mean you can't find it again. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who found their hair again. It can be hard for men to deal with hair loss, even though it is common. Luckily, I'm here to provide you with a solution so you don't even have to talk about it. Through Hims, you can restore your hair by accessing their personalized hair loss solutions. Men value many different things about their appearance, but if you're a guy who really cares about your hair and find that it's slowly going away, you might be feeling discouraged when you look in the mirror. And that's where Hims comes in. Check out their personalized hair loss solutions, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides you with convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
Saving money now during Menards Bag Sale. All prices after 15% bag sale discount. Pick up a six-pack of LED light bulbs for just $2.97. Get a wood or fiberglass claw hammer for only $2.29 each. 52-ounce bottles of Ajax dish soap, just $2.97. And 12 packs of Shasta soda in assorted flavors are only $4.19. Don't miss out on Menards Bag Sale happening now. Good through January 12th. See store for complete details.
Save big money at Menards.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Over the past 75 years, more than 10,000 chemicals have entered our food supply, but the EU allows just 300 additives. At Thrive Market, we prioritize quality, banning over 1,000 ingredients found in conventional grocery stores. Our Healthy Swap scanner helps you find better versions of your pantry essentials without the junk, dyes, or fillers, and everything is delivered right to your doorstep. So shop at a grocery store that actually cares about your health at thrivemarket.com/getstarted for 30% off your first order and a free $60 gift.
Honestly, yeah. I know you're being a head coach, but I Sam Darnold, you know, be a good example of a guy who, you know, if he was available to another team, it wouldn't be that exciting to work with him. And you got to leave behind Lamar Jackson. I mean, I would be thinking about it.
Yeah, you're right at that. I think you got the golden goose in Lamar Jackson. There's not a lot of coaches who have the opportunity to coach that dynamic talent right there in Baltimore. So you're right. This might be a chance where someone offers him a job and he said, think about it and decide to stick around. Maybe the Ravens give him a little pay bump to thank him for his service. But yeah, you're right. I think the chances the Monk and leaving are not as high as I initially thought in this conversation. You're a great persuader, Ken. So I appreciate that. But yeah, it looks like I think Munkin might be sticking around for at least a couple of more years.
Yeah, the Ravens could definitely throw money at him. That's a possibility. They did it with DaCosta to keep him around and keep him on a track to be the general manager. They're not offering Munkin a future in a higher role. They're offering him his current role. So all they can do is give him a little more money the way they did to Lewis back in the day.
Yep.
So he would have been the guy. All right. So let's talk about the offense a little bit from this game. Obviously, we're going to do less probably talking about the offense from a game against the Browns where the Browns have clearly given up. One of the key things to me, they won snap count effectively 67 to 55. It's always nice to do that in a game you want to get over with. But more importantly, I think the key factor I look at in this game, the Browns missed 26 tackles this game. First of all, I've never seen a total that high, not one game. They missed 31% of their tackles.
That's insane.
31%. And the Ravens missed 6 by comparison. So it's pretty obvious which team had something to play for here. And Derrick Henry certainly made his footprint felt in the later part of this game.
Love it. I think it's a testament to where the Ravens' head are at. It was Derrick Henry's birthday at the time, so you know he wanted to get into the end zone. He did so for sure. But yeah, you could tell the Browns were out of it. A lot of Ravens fans were a little concerned with some of the decision-making the Ravens were doing in the early portions of that game, and I get the angst in regards to trying to get that division sewn up, but I think the Ravens understood that this was a Ravens team that was definitely overpowering a Browns team that was out of it. I think a lot of it was showing something new for defense coordinators in the future to have to worry about come playoff time. And a lot of it is just that, again, the Browns were just not into it at all. You could tell right away. There were a couple of players who were trying to play with some energy, but once the Ravens did what they had to do with the run game, and this is going to be a theme throughout the playoffs, hopefully if the Ravens make this run, it's going to be tough to tackle Henry when it's cold outside and when it's windy and when it just feels like your fingers are going to fall off. You don't want to tackle a big guy like that. So I think regardless of the outcome, who they were playing, it was going to be tough to tackle them. But 26 is kind of nuts I saw that stat line to think about. It's ridiculous. But that's a testament to the Ravens and a testament to how poorly the Browns played this year.
Yeah, it wasn't all Derrick Henry. Derrick Henry did have a bunch of missed tackles. I think it might have had 12 in this game, like 9 as a runner, 3 as a receiver. But Lamar Jackson caused 7 missed tackles in this game.
Oh, wow.
And so they got 3 more from, might have been Mark Andrews, might have given them 3. But they had a... It was well spread around, and if you look at their defense, it was well spread around too. They had Reed, the linebacker number 59, had six missed tackles in the game, but it was a very tough game. And in a lot of ways, it reminded me of the final game of 2020 when they rushed for 404 against the Bengals. And, you know, there had been some smack talk before the game. Jermaine Pratt always seems to be at the center of a lot of that crap. And the Ravens really ran it all over him and the rest of the Bengals team that day. But the reason I bring that up is I can't necessarily map what happens in a game where one team doesn't care in the last game of the season to January football in the same way. I'd love to. I would love to believe that Henry's going to run over, you know, motivated playoff teams in the same way. I just don't believe it's true. I think that the the Ravens had their own experience bottling up Henry in the postseason in that 2020 game, the COVID game at Tennessee, when they went down there and they held him without a first down on, I think, 17 carries for 40 yards or something. I mean, it was a really limited number of total yards. But Tennessee's only rushing first down in that game was a quarterback sneak by Tannehill.
I remember that game. Actually, it was definitely, I'm very excited about that game because I think the Ravens won that game pretty handily, I believe. I won't know handily,
but I think they won by 7. I think it was 20-13, but they were down 10-0. Lamar had the great run to get them back even.
Yeah.
Where he escaped, and then they won it on the Peters interception at the end of the game, where they kind of teabagged the logo in the center. Yeah.
I remember that. Good times. But yeah, I agree with you. I don't think that, for instance, when the Ravens play the Steelers on Saturday, that that defense won't be motivated. I think effort plays a huge part in defense sometimes, especially in that first and second level with those linebackers. I think wanting to get hit by Derrick Henry is going to be a huge thing. I think the Steelers are likely going to be open to that. So it's going to be more scheme for the Ravens to get Derrick Henry those rushing lanes. I don't think it's going to be an instance where he's running through arm tackles and getting the job done. I think it's going to be up to the offensive line, up to Todd Monken to scheme up some things, and up to the Ravens as a whole to get Derrick Henry those maneuverability, those lanes to get through those would-be tacklers. But I don't think it's going to be an instance, to your point, that these guys are going to be just whiffing on tackles. It's going to be a dogfight. It's going to be tough, and it's going to be AFC North Ravens Steelers football. But yeah, I don't expect. I will love it, like you mentioned, for him to just do it for three straight games all the way to the Super Bowl. But the likelihood of that happening is minimal. It's going to be up to the Ravens as a whole to get the job done. Obviously, feed Derrick Henry. I can't stress that enough. No six carries in a game type deal. But
concerned of that.
Yeah, I think that hopefully that's done with. But I think overall the Ravens are equipped to handle it. Again, it's going to be up to the whole team to get Derrick Henry involved. I think he's going to be a key part to this Ravens success in the postseason.
I mean, part of the way to make sure that Henry doesn't get left out of the game plan at some point is to get ahead in the football game. If you get ahead in the football game, you're always incented to have Henry be the first option and anything else be kind of a second choice. And by the way, I mean, this is the Steelers. They've got to win this football game. And, you know, I said the same thing against the Browns last week, is like people are, you know, want this to be a coronation. And this is really a case where they need to win a football game to win the AFC North. And they've got a credible defensive unit in terms of Browns, not a particularly great one in aggregate, but they've got weapons out there that can do some things. And the same thing is true of the Steelers. As badly as this team is banged up, you know, they have one really underappreciated outstanding player who they'll be getting back, I assume, for this game. I think he played last week, actually, in week 18, but that's Deshaun Elliott. And he has an enormous number. I have to actually check that out if he did play last week, but he's had a great tackling season. And he's the guy who makes up for Patrick Queen's missed tackles on that team. Patrick Queen is a missed tackle waiting to happen, still is. He's still a guy that, you know, Henry can really target, as if he's got one shot at you, that's not necessarily a bad thing at all. But Deshaun Elliott is a great tackler, and he's really been the guy who's had the kid with his hole in the hand in the dike to keep the thing from imploding very effectively. So we'll see if that makes a difference.
Yeah, and to your point, I think Deshaun Elliott is underrated. I think a big part of their success in that first meeting was Deshaun Elliott being able to get into the nitty gritty of that defense and get those tackles going. So I think Minkah Fitzpatrick had a lot more say, well, I would say give or take, in how they were accomplishing tackles as a defense in that second meeting. I think he was spying Lamar a lot, but I think having an extra safety, having a guy that you know can get in there and tackle is paramount for them. So it does make me nervous that he is going to be potentially back. I don't remember if he played against the Bengals. I would assume so, because they did have some success.
He did. played against Kansas City. He played against Cincinnati. He had, this is the really incredible thing. He had three more stops against Cincinnati for the year. He has 31 stops. That's defensive wins basically occurring where he makes a tackle versus only two missed tackles the entire season. That's 15.5 to one. I've never seen a ratio like that in any position. I'd look for it at inside linebacker. And they have Peyton Wilson, who was pretty good at that in college with like about a 7 to 1. I think it was like 11 to one in college. And there was like one other guy in the entire draft pool who was at 7 to 1 and a few guys at like about 4 to 1, but there are a lot of guys at about 3 to 1 as a normal ratio. It's just, it's an unbelievable, non-stable ratio for Elliott, which has really been a wonderful season. I mean, that's the kind of thing. He should either be somebody should be after him for a big pay bump if he's a free agent. I don't know if he is, or he should be, you know, somebody, the Steelers with some extra cap space, really try and sign long term at this point. I don't know if they will, but he just had a remarkable year. That's for sure.
I enjoy his game. Honestly, I like his demeanor. I like his play on the field. I think it all is going to play well for the Steelers to have him there. You mentioned that he played for the Chiefs as well. That gives me a little bit more, I feel a little bit better now, because I think the Chiefs probably ran towards the Steelers the same way the Ravens planned to with Isaiah Pacheco at the time. So makes me feel a little bit better. But to your point, he is a dangerous tackler. And if you decide to run at him, be prepared to get stopped. Now, I'm not sure how they choose to attack the Ravens in this go with the loss of Zay Flowers. So it may be a case where he's more so near the line of scrimmage, more so than not. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with him. But he is a dangerous tackler, somebody that is underrated that Ravens fans should be paying close attention to.
Yeah, definitely. He's a potential spy in this game. So is Peyton Wilson, who's a darn good player for who he is. Yeah. He had in the first game, he had the strip of Justice Hill for the interception that was just a horrible memory.
Should have been a fumble.
Yeah, probably should have been a fumble. Yes. Yeah. Ravens have kept up with most of their rate statistics, and we don't need to go through this too much in the Browns, but they still lead the NFL in red zone touchdown rate. They went 3 out of 4 in this game. Could have easily been 4 out of 4 because their one miss was that shot put pass to Henry that was overthrown. That's not a pass Lamar misses very often, even though it's just it's an off schedule weird play. But he's made that before with Nick Boyle in the Bills game in 2019, I believe. He had a 2 yard shot put pass to Boyle that was very similar. It's definitely a play I expected him to make.
Do you think that was designed, or do you think that was on the fly with Derrick Henry? That'd be interesting.
I got the same question from somebody else, and I honestly don't really know. But it looked like, if I had to guess, it looked like there was movement along the line. There was an expectation of some sort of a pass, and there were three guys, I believe. Let me look at my notes here, because there's three guys, I believe, who were held in on that. Yeah. Okay, so there were 3-0 sets and chips on that play. So three of the eligible receivers were held in to block. So it was some sort of RPO going to the right side. Henry's the only guy who really could have been the receiver on that play. So I think it had to be one of the options, but Lamar was probably also looking to run it. But they were careful not to get ineligibly downfield on the play as well. So that tells me that the pass was an option.
Yeah, I think that's more what it was. I think it was an option for Lamar to either run it in himself, or if they got some edge attack on him, then toss it to Derrick Henry. I like the play call. I like the play call a lot. I know a lot of Ravens fans said, "Oh, just punching in with Derrick Henry," but you're giving defense coordinator something to think about. And you know the Ravens love this read option stuff that they do, especially in 4th and 1, hand and go to Lamar Jackson or give it to Derrick Henry. So having that third option be a pass to Derrick Henry of all people, I think will help pay some dividends for them as far as preparation for these other opposite defense coordinators. To your point, Lamar usually always makes those plays. He usually always does. And I think in the postseason, when it's do or die, those plays will count for something. So I'm anxious because I know the Ravens are going to try and convert 4th downs. I think that's just the way it is. So we'll see how, what's the word I'm looking for? How willing they are to try and make those conversions on 4th and 1 or 4th and 2 instead of going with Justin Tucker, who struggled a little bit early on but seems to have found his way.
Yeah, that will be one of the interesting things we see, is just how much they're willing to give Tucker a leash in this postseason. I think there's there's a lot of reasons from an analytics standpoint, and I'm a math guy, so you know, I they never go for it enough. Even the fourth and one from their own 16 against San Diego, it's the most obvious go for it decision you can get. I mean, from a math perspective, it's, and everybody's questioning it. Everybody's saying, "Oh, you can really question that." No, you really can't. It's freaking obvious. It should have gone for it. The Ravens had another big one recently, and I'm forgetting the game this happened, but they're playing for about 11% of the probability to win the game in total, and they had an advantage of 4.7% on it, and they didn't do it. I was up in arms about that one. So anyway, fourth and eight, going forward at the 35-yard line, I'm fine with that kind of stuff. And they're going to miss a fair percentage of them. The payoff is tremendous when they hit it, so you really want to do it. I got like a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Got a question for you, Sam. Is what changes can this Ravens offense make going into this postseason? So you're facing a different circumstance in terms of weather for starters, and in terms of the absence of Flowers. What changes are even available to them that they can say, yes, let's embrace this. Let's do this differently. Let's take this out of our game. Let's change personnel. Perhaps what can they do?
I am very interested in that. I've been going back and forth in my head with it. Do you play more 12 personnel? Do you give yourself that opportunity? You have the personnel for that, you know, and I think entering the season, a lot of people were wondering if they were going to run a lot more 12, 13. I just don't know if they want to take that chance, because if you run that personnel, a lot of times you're jammed in, and mm-hmm. you give less field for the defense to defend. So that's my worry. I think they go that route though, in some regards, but I also think they likely lean on a Nelson Aguilar to take over that Zay Flowers spot. Maybe keep it up with the screens, those bubble screens that they have success with Zay Flowers. I think Nelson Aguilar has that skill set to get it done. But yeah, it's going to be a challenge for them. I think this game in particular, the Ravens are going to have to get that early lead, keep it, and then establish the run and really take the Steelers out of that game. That's their best chance to win. But to your point, if it's 3-6 in the third quarter and you need an offensive output, you might have to lean on that 12 personnel, give Isaiah likely a chance to make plays along with Mark Andrews and really throw it that way. Something they've done earlier in the years, but not so much now with the emergence of Zay Flowers.
Yeah, great point about the 12 personnel, because I think that's one of the options available to them, and 13 even. The Ravens have, when you put three tight ends on the field, you don't know how the Ravens are going to deploy those. And it could be Kolar is an inline guy, and likely and Andrews are both split. They can show you that. Why looks, they can show you a different look where they line up and it's Jackson obvious in power football. I think one of the things I'd like to see, I want to see them embrace more misdirection in this postseason. So they've done really well versus the Steelers, but it's not even the Steelers I'm as worried about as the other teams. They may, it's really bad to get ahead of yourself here, really bad, but it's the other teams they may face as well. I mean, I think they need to, if Zay Flowers is going to be missing for more than 1 week, and Ravens fans have already seemed to, and some national media have already foolishly, indicated that it might only be 1 week. I think that's hellaciously optimistic.
Yep. I agree. I've heard things that lead me to believe this might not be a 1 week thing. Honestly, I don't think that he's going to be out for the entire postseason, but I think division around is optimistic as well. I think it's fair to say that I don't think he plays in this game. If he does, wow, what a recovery. And if he's playing in the division around, he's not close to 100%. Why risk it? I'm thinking AFC Championship, Super Bowl is where the Ravens are hoping that they get him. But if you're thinking outside, if you're thinking he's going to come sooner than that, that's very optimistic considering the injury and how he looked when he fell in that game. I'm very thankful it wasn't more serious than that. But
yeah.
Again, if you're thinking he's going to be for this game or the next game, I think it's very optimistic.
So one of the things they really miss with Flowers is some of the jet motion play. And he's one of the guys who gives them that. I don't really like his usage in that regard, but they have to replace it. I was hopeful that was something Deontay Johnson could do more of, is be a jet motion guy, a bubble screen guy, a guy who could be a little elusive there. Justice Hill coming back can give you some of that if you want to play some pony. And the other guy who they really haven't tapped into in any regard so far is Keaton Mitchell.
Hell yeah.
And if they want to stick him out at flanker or, on that right side where he can come in motion and potentially take a jet toss to take, or even just threaten it. I mean, other teams then have to respect the space on that side of the field and do things with it. And I think you got better chances if you embrace misdirection. So I think that would be of all the things they could do. I think actually any change at wide receiver is going to have very minimal impact. But I think embracing misdirection and using more heavy personnel, as you suggested, are probably the two things that could do the most for them.
Agreed. I don't think there's any receiver that's going to come in and just be Zay Flowers to be anywhere near Zay Flowers. But you read my mind. I think Keaton Mitchell is going to play a huge part. Justice Hill, a huge part in this misdirection, using him to move along the sideline. I think the short and intermediate game, don't be surprised that they use a lot of Justice Hill and Keaton Mitchell in that regard to kind of supplant the usage that they got out of Zay Flowers. Yeah, that's a great point. I think Justice Hill does return this week. I think an illness pretty much held him back more so yep. than the concussion. And I think Keaton Mitchell slowly getting acclimated. You're not seeing the speed or burst that you saw last year, and that's to be expected with an injury that he had. But he's starting to get into his groove, and I think they're starting to see there's some possibilities for usage in that regard. So I think the Ravens are going to do a lot more of that when Derrick Henry's down on the field. And I think they could have some success, but to your point, misdirection would be very important, especially with these defenses playing aggressive football to try and crash in and stop this running game from getting in the way.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Let's run through some of the things about Lamar in this game. Obviously, one of the things that really precluded Lamar from setting the all-time passer record, unfortunately, was the weather. I was walking up to the game and the wind is just whipping and you're like, there's no way it's happening today. Not with this going on. It takes away so much. The Browns also were fairly effective in this game, generating pressure largely from a lot of off ball blitzing. And they have Myles Garrett, they have a credible defense. Their defensive line, honestly, up front did some things that the Ravens, in particular Linderbaum, was having a really hard time handling, but it's something that also you would hope wouldn't happen in a game where they've basically got a Bahamas game and they're really thinking about their next stop or their next vacation plans. I thought really we talked about earlier, but the injury to Michael Hall, you know, a second round pick in his first year, and the worst thing that can happen to the Browns is an injury that lingers into 2025 now, and now they've got one, you know, to a key defender. I think that was kind of not the wake up call, but kind of the go to sleep call, the lights out call for the Cleveland Browns in this game.
Excellent point. I didn't even put two and two together like that, but you're right. When a guy like that gets down and he's injured and you don't know how that will impact your next season, you know, this season's over, but now you're impacting 2025 with perhaps a new coaching staff, perhaps with new pieces coming in to try and create something that was not there this year. So yeah, to your point, it kind of dimmed the lights a bit for the Cleveland Browns. And as far as the pressure that Lamar Jackson got in this game, I was very surprised, honestly, by the off-tackle blitzing, I should say, was very effective. Ty Linderbaum struggled a little bit. I hope that doesn't continue into the Steelers game. I hope the Steelers are going to see something in this game that can translate into this week's upcoming matchup. But that was concerning. And I think that the Ravens did a good job of, you know, finding a way to get through that. A lot of that had to deal with getting Derrick Henry involved. But I think it's a wake-up call for the Ravens and the offensive line as a whole. It's something that Ravens fans have been talking about all year long. Obviously, there aren't going to be changes made this year to the offensive line, but it's going to be the time for Daniel Falele, Tyler Linderbaum, and Patrick McCurry and Voorhees to get together and get a complete game. They're going to need him in this contest for sure. And Falele didn't actually do too bad. I'm sure we'll touch on that in the second half, but I think all in all, this is a wake-up call for the offensive line. Get it together, block your guys for 60 minutes and get that win. But to the credit of the Browns, they did have great success in getting to Lamar Jackson.
Yeah. So 13 pressures, largely from numbers in their case. Now, when you blitz Lamar and bring numbers, they used 4.71 pass rushers per play, which is very high. When you do that, you force two things. First of all, you force the Ravens to take eligible receivers out, and the concept of a green dog is fairly well known. If you have a red dog is an off-ball player who blitzes without regard to concern for the eligible receiver leaving the backfield, usually the running back. A green dog is when a linebacker will blitz after he sees that the running back is not going out in the pattern or has already been committed to pass blocking. Then he's assigned to blitz under those circumstances. Some people consider a green dog when a zone defender is forced by rule to trigger downhill against a quarterback leaving the pocket. That's not in my traditional green dog definition, but if you have learned it that way or you think of it that way, that's fine as well. But I consider that to be a kind of a separate category and not even a real pass rusher when players do that. It's just the rules of the zone defender on the near side to do that. But the point was that because the Browns did so much red dog blitzing, the Ravens had to assign additional players. They ended up using, I've got it right here somewhere, I know 18 set blockers in the game and 10 chip blockers. That, by the way, the set blockers really, those are guys that are completely taken out of your pattern. The chip blockers, they're launching themselves into usually an edge defender and then continue out in the pattern. And those kind of blocks really restrict what routes you have available. So you're really, in some ways, that could be good with Lamar Jackson, who extends plays, and then it gives you a chance to have a trickle out player later, like Derrick Henry, say, on the near touchdown, that might give you real value. But a lot of times, you're just really restricting the routes available to yourself, usually for a tight end.
Yeah, and I think exactly to your point, that's what they did. They did a lot on Rosengarten's side, if I'm not mistaken, with the chip blocks and all that stuff. Yeah, so I see the Ravens do that. I expect them to continue to do that. It does limit the routing a little bit, but I think to your point, it overlaps that. I think the concept of that loss of diversity is overlapped by Lamar's just talent, specialness, and extending plays and just doing off-ball stuff. Stuff that we saw with Ben Roethlisberger with the Pittsburgh Steelers. So glad we have that now with the Ravens, because that was so frustrating to watch that as a Ravens fan, to see Ben do that. So I think, go ahead, blitz six or seven guys if you want to, but that's just going to lean more into what the Ravens do best. I think delays, a lot of that, draw plays for Derrick Henry could be a potential way for them to kind of stave off that defensive scheme. But I think in this game, you're going to see a lot more than that than less because of Zay Flowers, a loss. But also, I think Rashad Bateman, if he continues to have success early on, could kind of stave back what they're trying to do. I think the Browns kind of got a little bit of that because Rashad Bateman was having some success. But it was a Derrick Henry show in that game. Hopefully that continues in the Pittsburgh Steelers matchup. But if not, I'm leaning on Rashad Bateman to kind of save me from potentially pulling out whatever little hair I have on top of my scalp in regards to the
matchup.
I feel
the same way. I'm right there with you. So let's talk a little bit about the opportunity set that Lamar had. So we mentioned the Browns got some pressure in this game, and I'll talk a little bit about it. And in terms of ample time and space opportunities, they had 10 in the game, 32%. 32% is not a bad number, and in and of itself. The problem is the opposing pressure number that goes with that was 13 or 42%. You don't really want to give up a 1.3-to-1 relationship. A 1-to-1 relationship, I'd say, is a good game. Slightly more than that is okay. You know, 12-to-11, that kind of thing is a good relationship between the two. But when you start getting up to about 13-to-10, that's really too much pressure to be allowed. And even though the Ravens didn't get sacked in the game, we saw Lamar working under some pressured conditions, throwing some balls in a hurry that were more contested than normal. I had 7 contested balls in the game, which was high. But I'll go through quickly what he did. Ample time and space, gave up 11.1. Sorry, he threw for 11.1 yards per play, well above what you'd expect. 8.5 yards would be typical for an ample time space, which if you haven't listened to the show too much in the past, maybe you're a fan of Sam's who are listening for the first time. This is a 3-second pocket where you have room to step into the throw. That's how ample time and space is defined. Ball out quick. He was 3 of 8 for 25 yards. By definition, that wouldn't include any sacks or anything, but only 3.1 yards per pass is not going to get it done in those situations. So was that, there were definitely some hurried throws in there where the pressure was coming, but it hadn't gotten there yet, that I felt like Jackson really, it's almost like being pressured. And then they had 13 pressures, 42%, which is too high. He was 6 of 13 though on those throws, for 81 yards and 6.2 yards per play. Now, the 6.2 yards per play is nothing special, well below Lamar Jackson's season average, but it's also terrific for when you are under pressure. You just don't want to be under pressure that much. So in one case, Lamar making the best of bad situations is one way to look at that.
And that's how I had to take it. You know, he was definitely under duress and very noticeable. I just don't know if the Ravens are going, what they're going to try and do to combat that, because the Steelers have a similar defense. I want to say that similar in some sense. They do play a lot more man. than usual, than the average team. But man, it has me worried that the Steelers could adopt that philosophy. I think the Browns came into this game saying, okay, we're just going to throw the kitchen sink at Lamar. We have nothing to lose. We don't want him to get going. Let's see what he does in the pressure. Let's get out of here. Let's see if we can, you know, play spoiler, obviously, but we're not worried about our record, really. Let's just throw caution to the wind, and I think it worked for a little bit, but I think a good way to combat that is the run game. Can you blitz effectively and stop the run at the same time? I don't know, but we do know that Lamar Jackson does have success against the blitz, and we saw inklings of that with the numbers that you mentioned. So we'll see what happens. I'd like to tie everything to the Steelers game because it is coming back, but as far as the Browns game is concerned, I think he did pretty well under the situation. You'd like to see more from your offensive line, but I think, again, as you mentioned, they're sending free runners. That's just a numbers game at that point. So you can't fault the offensive line too much, but I would love to see how the Ravens choose to combat that, because I do expect Steelers to adopt that concept come Saturday.
We mentioned earlier that Lamar had 7 missed tackles forced for the game. He also ran the Ravens out of 4 pressures in this game. So what I mean by that is he scrambled for positive yards on a play where he was flushed from the pocket by pressure. Now, that doesn't get assigned in the same way to an offensive lineman, but you could look, a lot of systems would look at that and say, it was really 17 pressures, it wasn't 13. Mm-hmm. And we take that would make this, you know, performance by the offensive line and the performance, the pressure on Lamar look a lot worse. But that was the most pressures he'd ran the Ravens out of since week 1 against Kansas City, when he ran them out of 7 pressures. So a lot of missed tackles forced by Lamar. Really outstanding run game right off the bat in terms of negotiating his way through traffic as a scrambler in this game.
I really hope he does the same thing against Pittsburgh. I think he ran the ball a little more against the Steelers. Didn't have as much success on the ground in those situations as he did in the first meeting, even though the Ravens ended up losing that game. But I would love to see him do that more. I think he's going to be forced to be in those situations more, and he needs to have the wherewithal to know that, okay, if the play's breaking down, I need to get something going on my legs. And that's something that we really knocked on him prior to the end of the Eagles game, where he wasn't using his legs more, especially in those situations. We're starting to see that now take a turn for the positive for Ravens fans. And I think it's going to pay huge dividends for them. It just adds another element, another dimension for the Steelers to worry about. The Steelers didn't really have to worry about that in the past, especially the last couple of years, because he's been more of a drop-back passer, contrary to popular belief. But this is another element to his game, and it's good to know that if the offensive line is struggling, you still got number 8 back there to make something out of nothing. And that's why the Ravens, one of the many reasons why the Ravens have had so much success this season.
Yeah, gives him multiple check down opportunities, really. Derrick Henry has proved to be a very useful check down option in this game. But Lamar's, you know, usual mode of operation for his entire career has been his own check down. You know, you don't need a Ray Rice coming out of the backfield looking for the football every single play when you've got Lamar Jackson able to run the ball perfectly well himself. So it's something that I would be shocked if he is not a big part. And one of the criticisms, frankly, of Lamar in some of the big losses, including the Kansas City game and including the Tennessee game in particular in 2019, is that he over-depended on his own legs to come back. Even the win over Tennessee, I mean, it was terrifically keyed by the Lamar Jackson scramble touchdown run. And of course, if it works, nobody ever says you're relying too much on your on your quarterback to run. But in the Tennessee game, he had a ton of rushes, and he and the running backs didn't have a whole lot. And that was something that a lot of people faulted him for. But yeah, I'm with you. Caution goes to the wind in the postseason here. They need to get Lamar Jackson with the football in his hand.
Oh yeah, whatever it takes. I don't care if he runs it 40 times or passes it 40 times to get the job done. Obviously, an effective offense is Derrick Henry touching the ball 20-plus times and Lamar throwing it 20-plus times. That's the formula. That's the key to success. But things go awry. You need to have players available to deviate and make corrections and all of that good stuff. So they have the most versatile quarterback in the league in Lamar. So they're in good hands for sure.
Yeah. All right. Always fun talking football with you, Sam. How about you tell folks where they can either talk football with you, maybe ask you a question directly, or where they can find your podcast?
Awesome. Yeah, you can find me on YouTube at Raven Sock Podcast. Usually post weekly on there, our show. You can also find us on Spotify, Apple Music, Apple Podcasts, I should say, weekly. You can also find me on Twitter X. You can find me there. I'm always open to having conversations about Ravens football. You can find us at Raven Sock Podcast or on Instagram at Raven Sock Podcast.
All right. There's a lot of social media links for you. Lots of opportunity to watch Sam's stuff. And here's Sam on this show now. It's the third time you've been on this year, or is it second time, right?
Second time. Yep.
Okay. Outstanding. And I plan to have you on as a regular recurring guest as long as you want to do it. My friend, I'll tell you that, because it's always a great discussion. Other folks out there, if you're looking for other film study content this week, there'll be two shows out tomorrow. Okay, now you're listening to this probably on Tuesday, given it was a Saturday game. We're recording this on Monday night. This will be posted on Tuesday. You might be listening to it Tuesday or Wednesday. On Wednesday, there'll be two shows about the MVP released, and I've got to get Sam's thoughts about it at the end of the next episode. But one of them is an outstanding look from a voter analysis perspective, literally trying to handicap the votes of all 50 voters. In terms of the MVP rate. And the other one is a more of an analysis episode done by Mike Sando of The Athletic, who is an MVP voter himself and is going through his own logic of how he voted for the MVP, and not saying exactly who he did vote for, but you kind of get the impression from the metrics he's looking for that he might be kind of pro Lamar in this case. But anyway, I think those are two outstanding episodes. I thought that in both cases, the guest is extremely well prepared, ready to discuss the topic, and I'd urge you to take a listen. Sam, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks so much for having me.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Less $830 trade-in / promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.
Zaxby's Sensation Salad is so much more than a plain old salad. It's a salad, which begs the question, at what point does a salad stop being a salad and become a salad? Is it when you add Zaxby's fried chicken to it, crunchy wontons, Asian slaw, citrus vinaigrette, teriyaki glaze, sweet and spicy sauce? Or is it when you top it all with a handmade perfectly fried egg roll? Without a doubt, the egg roll. The Zenzation Salad, only at Zaxby's.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.